We're talking today with Mark Hodges. Mark, let's talk a little bit about some of your perceptions about the crop based on what you saw with the research and the material that you pulled together for Plains Grains. Yeah, and an interesting analogy that you gave the wheat commissioners a while ago about the last three crops, that each of them were a little distinctively different for a different, I guess, clientele.
They were, and of course, I guess, again, like it seems we say every year, another abnormally normal year or normally abnormal year. But, yeah, I mean, you know, 2 years ago the crop was really a miller's crop. We had large berries, something that a miller could get high meal yield out of, flour yield out of, something he really liked. And then, you know, probably not the best protein in the world 2 years ago, so the baker probably wasn't really satisfied with what he got. And then last year, you know, we had really good protein, didn't have a lot of volume, obviously. But, you know, the baker was really happy with it because he had the protein he needed to make kind of end product. The miller probably wasn't quite as happy because he didn't get the yield he wanted. And then this year was really the producer's crop, you know. The mill probably isn't going to be real happy, and the baker isn't going to be real happy, but they'll figure out a way to deal with it, as they always do. But the producer produced a lot of bushels. So, you know, over the last 3 years, it's kind of gone the full round.
So, you know, as you think about the 2012 crop, how functional, how useful of a crop is this to the end users?
Boy, that's a really tough question, something that we've really tried to get our arms around, because while we've seen crops that have been stressed and the effects of those stress, that stress has always been on the front end, not on the back end quite as much as it was this year. And the crop was so far ahead physiologically all from spring on until harvest that we just haven't seen that before, and that was true from Texas all the way to North Dakota. And so it's something we hadn't seen before. I'm not sure we completely got our arms around it yet, but you know, we had individual locations where we had 9% protein up to 13 or 14% protein being delivered into the same location, and those weren't producers that were bad managers. A lot of them had plenty of nitrogen down. It was the way that the crop developed, the way we had hot temperatures, March, April, May, and the stage of development the plant was in, the way it progressed so rapidly from a physiological state. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons there. But because of that, the functionality in some cases in some locations wasn't there, but in other locations where they had maybe the same average protein and maybe the same kind of variability, the functionality is there. And so it's really hard to find. I'll give you an example. You know, Texas and Oklahoma averaged 12.5% protein, which normally say, boy, this is a great crop, good baking crop. They were small kernels, but they were uniform. You know, the miller isn't going to like smaller kernels, but they were uniform, which is basically his benefit. And a baker would look at it and say, well, you know, 12.5% protein average, wheat protein average, you know, I can work with that. But in some cases, we were below the five-year average as far as dough functionality, as far as loaf volume, those kind of things. So it's really a mosaic pattern that we've really had a hard time getting our arms around. But, again, it's a real reason why we need to be doing the testing that we do, so that we can define that information and where the buyer can find what he's looking for.
So is there a way, I mean, do you blend that type of a crop? In other words, are different, you know, functionality of crops to come up with something that works?
Well, that blending will take place. And, of course, we're always concerned that there'll be a lot of really low protein blended with some really high protein, and the average comes out to be something that the end user doesn't like. But probably one of the advantages this year was a lot of the low protein went to feedlot. And it went early. And what we test what's delivered to the elevator. So what we're testing is what the crop actually was and maybe not what's actually being milled into flour. Mm-hmm. So our hope is that a lot of that low protein did go into the feed market and that that better protein was left. And so we're going to end up with a crop that the customer likes domestically and internationally. But, again, it's something that we need to really watch, keep a handle on, and understand when those shipments are made that we have some kind of sampling done that we know that our customer gets what he wants.
Any take-home messages really to the producer himself about, you know, what we learned from 2012 then?
I guess I can't say at this point, you know, what the message is. You know, he could have done everything right and still ended up with low protein.
Because of Mother Nature.
Because of Mother Nature, that's correct. And obviously Mother Nature has a bigger effect than any other influence, and that's true every year, and that's not telling producers something they don't know. But, you know, we had probably producers that do a fantastic job of management, had plenty of nitrogen down. They looked at their potential in the late winter, early spring. They put more nitrogen down, which is what they're supposed to do to be successful. And a lot of that wheat ended up lodging, or it produced so many tillers that the plant just couldn't support it anymore and started shutting down, or fell over. And then the producer, maybe that's not as good a manager, that probably didn't have as much nitrogen down. Those plants came on, they stood up, they didn't lodge. He goes out there and harvests it, and he didn't have near the problem the good manager did. So, you know, it's one of those years that it's pretty hard to get our arms around. But again, another abnormally normal year.